So I read a story in one of the Utah newspapers about how the governor is planning on asking the U.S. Department of Agriculture for permission to thin the forest, clear out dead trees, and do some controlled burning in some of the protected areas, which are nearly half of the national forest lands in the state of Utah. So it says the Republican governor, which I don't know why they had to throw in Republican, I guess because it's important to know their party, the governor is seeking to adjust how the U.S. Forest Service readiness areas and conservation rule is applied to the state to allow for better state influence over national forests following particularly brutal wildfire season. It was the Salt Lake Tribune that actually wrote this story. So the governor and the story go on to say that this is in no way a backdoor effort to create ATV trails through national forests. And conservationists see this proposal as a ploy to use wildfires to open up lands to commercial logging. So I don't know. Most states are this way. So I'm not just bashing on the Utah governor. But the story seems to be skewed a little bit with throwing in that he's a Republican and therefore he wants to open up logging because Republicans are just greedy capitalist robber barons or whatever back in the day. But the simple fact of the whole story is that a governor of the state is trying to help thin the forest because the United States Forest Service is doing a poor job. And then all the people that are against this idea are trying to say that, well, you just want more ATV roads and you just want more access to the land. Well, isn't that kind of a silly notion? I mean, of course states want to have access to their land. It's their land. So as you read through this story, you start to see that, once again, the property management company that we as states hired to oversee our land are now telling us how to own our land. And this kind of goes to a 10th Amendment issue and some of the things that happened in Bunkerville and what went on there with the federal government thinking that the state does not own its land, which according to the Enabling Act of every state, the land was deeded to the state. The federal government cannot own land. It used to manage the lands that were purchased by the taxpayers back in the days of the Constitution and the Louisiana Purchase, and it was a territory. But once a state becomes a state by going through the statehood convention and all the hoops and everything that were in place, that land within the borders of that state were deeded to the state. And the state would use that land for logging, for oil exploration, for mining, for cattle and grazing, for farming. And that's how the state actually made money, so the state could build a school, build post roads, do the things that were necessary for a state to be in existence according to the federal government. So now all of a sudden, the federal government thinks that they can come in and seize this land from the real property owner, which is the people of that state, and turn it into a sanctuary, a national forest, a national park, a fish thing, which the federal government cannot own legally. The federal government can only own land for forts, armories, ports, and 10 square miles in Washington, D.C. That's it. The list is really, really, really short. Really, extremely, really short.
Shelby Gallagher here, letting you know the second book in my book series, A Great State, is set for release on October 28th. Book 2, The Aftermath, is a continuation of the story from The Divide, where our main character, Julie, a single mother, preps for a collapse. Her story is one of overcoming, strength, and prepping as her community crumbles around her. Sound like recent headlines? Book 2 continues the story with tragic details of what life will be like for those who don't prepare. Pre-order your copy now at my website, agreatstate.com.
Contra Radio listeners, this is Randy from Bulldog Custom Gun Leather. I've been building the finest custom leather holsters that many can buy for the past 12 years. I'm a retired 35-year veteran police officer and have carried a concealed firearm daily for the past 42 years. I know what works and what doesn't work for the safe and comfortable carrying of concealed firearms. I use only the finest premium cowhide tanned in the USA. Bulldog Custom Gun Leather is not a large holster manufacturer and never will be. All my holsters are handcrafted one at a time by me in my shop located in Fort Smith, Arkansas. My website address is www.bulldogleathercompany.com. That's bulldogleathercompany.com. Mention Contra Radio and receive a 10% discount on your order. Thanks.
I think what gets me so riled up about articles like this is that states have just kind of given up on controlling the federal government, which I see constantly in posts on Facebook and social media that they work for us. We need to take our country back. This is not right. We pay them. Well, yes, we do. But we have forgotten that they do work for us. And it is our country. And we do want it back. And how do we do that? Well, governors could start by exercising their rights. As the governor, one of the main powerhouses in a state is the governor. And the governor could tell the federal government to go away. And if the state elects good constitutional sheriffs, then he has a bodyguard in the background that will protect him and keep his call to back down the federal government and the Forest Service and all of these regulatory agencies if he chooses to. The state of Kansas has told the federal government, we're not going to enforce these federal gun laws. Eric Holder at the time got extremely upset and wrote a really nasty letter. And the governor and the sheriffs had all agreed that they weren't going to follow these or enforce these gun laws. So the governor wrote Eric Holder back and said, we appreciate your opinion. We've taken it under advisement and we're not going to follow them. We're not going to enforce them. And the minute a state stops enforcing federal law, which is its sovereign right and duty to do as a state, the problems kind of go away because the federal government will not send in troops like in the Civil War because they don't have the manpower. Now, they might send in more agents if a governor and the sheriffs are all hiding under their desk, like what happened in Oregon. The governor was corrupt, the judge was corrupt, and the sheriff was spineless. And Lavoie Finnegan ended up being murdered by federal agents on state land. The sheriff in that county, if he had maybe something in the way of a spine, he could have stopped the FBI from coming in and could have handled the problem, or the problem they felt was a problem, in a different way. But the media ran with it because they were allowed to, and the feds just stormtroopered that place and turned it into a circus. Meanwhile, the governor that didn't care about anything other than her contracts and her side deals with the uranium deal did nothing. And the sheriff and the judge who were part of these backdoor agreements in secret meetings did nothing. And a good person died, was murdered over an issue that was unfounded. So how can you allow a federal agency to come into your state, take over 50% of your land and call it a forest, a wildlife refuge, or whatever they call it. And then when someone protests that, all of a sudden those protesters are on federal land. It's not federal land because the federal government cannot own land. But the governors choose to roll over and not take a stand and protect the people. So when I'm reading this article, the things that stand out to me that I highlighted is that the Utah governor is going to ask, oh, how cute, the Department of Agriculture, a non-constitutional entity, for permission to protect state land. And it's the state's land. Well, not anymore, because we've allowed them to steal it. So once again, I call it a property management company. BLM is a property management company. You own 1,000 homes and you rent them out, let's just say. So you hire a property manager to handle those homes, to basically collect the money and to make sure tenants in there are not breaching their contracts or doing things that are not in the lease agreement. So 100 years goes down the road and all of a sudden the property management company is telling you, you can't rent this house without painting it a certain color. You can't put a new roof on it because we say you can't put a new roof on it. You can't protect your property until we say you can. And if you don't keep that roof from leaking, we'll still turn around and sue you because now you're being negligent. So you go, oh, well, crap, let me put a new roof on. No, you can't. And that's what happened with the Hammond family. They were protecting their land by doing controlled burns, which they had done since the inception of this ranch of theirs. And it got a little out of control, and it burned up a little bit of grass. And nothing was damaged. But it was somehow federal land, and therefore they were put in jail for destroying federal land. I'm confused. If the federal government can't own land, then how did you destroy federal land? It's not like they went and burned down an armory or sunk a bunch of ships in a port or invaded a fort and burned down the land on a U.S. Army or military fort. No, it was a ranch. It was grazing land. It was land that does not belong to the federal government. Why? Because it's unconstitutional. That's why. But when you do something like that, and all of a sudden these charges are brought against a family like the Hammonds, can they turn to their sheriff and go, hey, we elected you to protect our constitutional rights? Well, if the sheriff's not going to take a stand and have your back, then odds are you're going to go to jail, just like the Hammonds did. Well, then why do we have sheriffs? Well, because sheriffs have been co-opted into the government welfare system, the same as every other organization in a state. And sheriffs don't understand that their constitutional sworn duty, their oath, is to protect your property rights, your constitutional rights. So if the Hammonds would have had a sheriff that was actually paying attention and not hiding under a desk, the sheriff could have came out when these agents from the federal government showed up and said, hey, you're trespassing. Get off of the Hammonds' lands. Well, they burned up a bunch of grass. So? And that would have pretty much been the end of the conversation. But no. See, we don't have sheriffs that are constitutional. There's a few of them out there, but not too many. We don't have governors that understand their oath is a sworn oath to the people of that state to protect their rights, not to line their bank account. And I'm sorry, but it really is our fault that we need to take our country back because we elect these clowns. And we don't just elect them one time because maybe they said something that was really cute and kind of sounded nice and warm and fuzzy, and you go, I really like that guy's haircut. I'm going to elect him because he's got a full head of hair, which is the most mind-numbing thing I've ever heard. Well, that might be fine for the first time, but then they just continue to do this double speak and lie and spend millions of dollars to get elected, and then we elect him again and again and again. And with today's world of technology, it's not that hard to Google. I know Google is a funny word, and I think it's a mystery, like it exists on the dark web, and we can't, you know, just go, hey, Google, what's the voting record of this Yahoo that's running for governor? I guess that's beyond us. But we continue to elect them, and they continue to rob us blind, and we don't know why. Now, that's hard to find out, the why, the backroom deal, the secret combinations that go on. But they do go on. But you know what? If you just look at the person's voting record and you vote them out of office, they don't hang around for 60 years to get so ingrained into their dark world that we can no longer pry them out. So, it's a rant. I'll get off my rant. But it was an interesting thing that I read, and I just kind of wanted to bring it up because, you know, it happened to the Bundys in Nevada. It happened, you know, on the wildlife refuge, and, you know, someone got killed. And I just wanted to point out this is how it happens. See, it's an oversight, and then another oversight, and then another oversight. It's just like driving. You know, you make all these decisions as you're driving, you know, like 600 an hour or a minute. It's a ridiculous amount of decisions you have to make when you're driving, and we don't pay attention. So there's, you know, the critical factor that happens in an accident. You know, your windshield wipers weren't working exactly the way you had wanted them to. You know, you had a bad blade that it, you know, wasn't clearing the water off just right. No big deal. Doesn't matter normally. But then your tires weren't quite up to par, you know, and didn't have enough tread for this rainstorm that you're driving through. And then you're having a bad day. And all these little things don't really matter if you just were worried about it one at a time. You know, your windshield wiper, well, I'll replace that, you know, this weekend. But then there's the tire issue and a little bit of a braking issue that you'd noticed the other day. And then you woke up in a hurry because your alarm didn't go off. Well, when you put them all together, there's always a final factor that causes the accident. But it's that one trigger that caused it. But all of the other things that help facilitate the actual accident. You didn't see good enough. Your brakes didn't work good enough. You didn't have enough traction to stop. And that's what happens in politics. See, it's all these decisions we have to make and to study and to learn. So, you know, the governors are busy and they're running around trying to, you know, figure things out and deal with problems and issues that the media is always throwing at them and everything. And then the federal government comes along and says, hey, here's some more money, you know. Why don't you do this? And they're like, oh, fine, thanks. Yeah, here, put that in that account and let's get that taken care of. And then the politicians, you know, are corrupt. And any one of those things might not be that big of a deal that we could not overcome in a civilized society if we were paying attention. But then all of a sudden, there's that final factor. And then all of a sudden, everyone's just kind of paralyzed and going, well, what do we do? And then there's an accident. You know, somebody goes and protests on a wildlife refuge and says, hey, this is our land. We want it back. And then the federal government moves in their FBI guys and their hitmen. And the governor just doesn't care. And the sheriff's a coward. And they all build up to a man being murdered by a federal agent, which I thought was unconstitutional. Oh, well, maybe not. So that's why I bring these little things up, these little tidbits. It's complicated to be an American only because we've allowed it to become that way. Black Metal Firearms are a couple guys I know personally and friends of mine that put together some great accessories for all your firearms needs. Everything that I've seen them do is just top-notch and very nice looking. BlackMetalFirearms.com. Check them out. I think you'll be glad you did. Go to Facebook, Black Metal Firearms. They got a great page there too. Learn more about the workmanship and the craftsmanship they put into every accessory and every build they do. Well, as if that wasn't enough political speak for our show, we had an election. Yay! So everyone's really happy that we won the Senate. Okay, good. Awesome. If you're a Republican, that's awesome. And normally in a constitutional republic, the Senate wouldn't really matter because We wouldn't elect senators, but we don't live in that world, so whatever. But what I found funny was how many socialists, or whatever we want to call them, were elected to House seats. Now, these are your representatives. These are the people that actually represent you on a local level. And so somehow, I take it to mean that if I wanted to take the pulse of America in the heartland, the flyover states, that's a pretty good poll. You know, what does the average American think about freedom and liberty? Well, obviously, on a local level, in one of the biggest polls taken in a country is during the election, that is what people voted for. They voted for these Democrats that are professing higher taxes, more litigation, more investigation, more, I don't know, taxes, more welfare, more funding for abortion. Whatever their position was in your district is what the majority of your neighbors believed in enough to vote for that person. So, you know, the Senate aside and national politics aside, on a local level, that's a real peek into the mindset of your neighbors, the people that live in your district. Now, you know, yeah, you got to factor in gerrymandering, but for the biggest part, you know, the people on the ground, us, you and I, your neighbor, the guy down the street, or even in the next city, voted more for the Democrat Party than the Republican Party. And, you know, putting party politics aside, if you look at their message, that's what was okayed, is their message. Democrats have a message, Republicans have a message. Now, I know it's kind of skewed, but, you know, if someone's running in your local area for a political office and he's telling you, I'm going to push for more planning and zoning laws. I don't think you need to have chickens in your backyard. What are you, a farmer? And as your mayor, I'm going to vote for and pass these rules that say that you don't have a Second Amendment right, because that is the Democratic platform. So all the words that came out of their mouth during this election season were either words from the Democrat Party and their platform and their belief structure, or the Republican one. And I find it funny that in this poll taken, you know, November 6th, a national poll, to where it's not really left up to pollsters to ask silly questions. It was just like, do you want less or more freedom? It seems like the majority wanted less freedom based on what they said in their messaging during the campaign and their party's platform. So it's really easy to figure out what their game plan is, because they tell you, I'm the kind of politician that supports, you know, impeachment. I'm the politician that believes in gun control. I'm the kind of politician that agrees with my party that thinks the NRA is the worst thing ever created. And then people went out and voted for that. Were they lied to so much that they didn't see the obvious because it was just right in front of them, that they stepped over it to go for the shiny thing that the politician was dangling, you know, off over there? Or was it that the real mindset of the American people in most areas got them a majority in the House? And like I said, senators and politicians aside, the House is the representation. Those are the boots on the ground in precincts and counties that ran for local offices. And they were elected based on their beliefs and policies and the words coming out of their mouth. So that really tells me a lot about the uphill battle we fight to get our country back. And maybe we never will. I don't know. Because it always flips and flops and goes one way or the other. But, you know, these are the people that have said point blank, if you elect me, I'm going to do this. And they got elected. And what this is gun control, is curtailing liberty and property rights and freedom. So that's kind of scary. You know, last week we talked a little bit about having, you know, your focus, your morals and values. And I know a lot of people look at that as religious speak and, oh my God, don't talk about religion. But it really has to do with the subjects that we're talking about right now today. And even though they're isolated subjects, like your governor, you know, going hat in hand to the Forest Service, can we please have a little more freedom to protect our land and our state that we own, but you don't think so, to the elections that are really a look into the mindset and the pulse of the American people, not the politicians and not the media, the people, to finding focus in your life. So they're connected and they're not really as religious as we would think. When I say, you know, religion can help us find a moral compass. And in our personal life, that may be more religious in context than in our social life. But if we don't see a fixed point on the horizon, and we don't keep looking at that fixed point as we head in a direction, then we're going to get turned around and walking in circles and get lost. And that's why I talk about that, is because we're not looking at that fixed point, because we have been deceived to understand what that fixed point is. Now, the founding fathers, I'll call them that, it's politically incorrect, but they were a bunch of guys, sorry. The founders of the country said, here's your fixed point. It's what was always called the light on a hill. You know, why? Because it's like a lighthouse in the ocean. You can see it. You head for that. And the Constitution was supposed to be that fixed point. So if we don't keep looking toward that and going, how should we run our country? Then we lose focus. We start walking off course. Because just like, you know, hiking, you know, if you have a dominant right leg or a dominant left leg, you're going to walk toward the left or the right, and you're going to get off course unless you keep looking at that fixed point. It's just simple navigation. It's not like magic here that I found some, you know, really cool thing. It's just the way it works. So the Constitution is that thing. And the one thing I harp on the most, and it pisses me off, I don't know if I can use that word, but it just upsets me so much. But I hear Hannity, you know, on national TV, you know, saying words that I thought, can he say that on TV? And I would try not to say it to, you know, my Utah audience, because I know most people in Utah are a little bit more not that way, you know, where swear words can turn people off. And I understand that, because sometimes, you know, people will say things that I will just tune them out because of the language. Usually it's because they're Democrats, and I don't listen to Democrats and liberals, but I digress. Your fixed point is the Constitution. Well, how have they taken us off point? Have you ever kind of looked at that? Now, this is a really little thing. It's semantics, but I think it leads to a bigger distraction. I hear all the time the word democracy. And if you look into democracy, the founders knew that democracy was a failed form of government. An average true democracy only lasts about 50 years, and then it implodes and destroys itself because it's mob rule. So the founders created a representative republic. Benjamin Franklin said that when he came out down the steps and the woman said, "What have you given us?" And he goes, "We've given you a republic. Pray you keep it." So when I hear somebody use the word democracy, it really sends a chill up my spine. I mean, it's an offensive word to me, and it is just semantic. But the other day, well, it's longer than a day ago, a couple months ago, I was talking to one of the instructors out at the military base that teaches military intelligence and winning hearts and minds and all that. And I said, you know, I think the problem is that you're over in the Middle East trying to teach them the American way of life so they will become a more democratic form of government. And I said, these people understand the meaning of the word democracy and republic. So what you're doing over there is telling them, we're going to try to help you set up a failing form of government because you used the word democracy. And I said, I don't know why you guys can't call it a republic. And I know over the years, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, these countries that call themselves republics, these banana republics, are actually dictatorships, and more of a dictatorship and tyranny than even a democracy. But they want to glam onto the word republic. We're a republic. The People's Republic of China, which is socialist. The Dominican Republic, which a lot of times in its history was more of a democracy and mob rule. So they use these words more of a marketing technique than actually a reality of the form of government in which they create and live in. So it's aggravating to hear politicians go, well, it's bad for our democracy. It's good for our democracy. Well, we're not a democracy, loser. And yet I hear news commentators use it. I really like Tucker Carlson. I think he's funny when he just starts ripping on these loons and he laughs in their face and mocks them. I think it's great. But I've heard him say, we are a democracy. No, we are not. But it gets said, and it's part of the unintended brainwashing of a society through marketing and advertising. It's the same thing. You know, if they tell you Coke is good for you enough, you're going to start drinking Coca-Cola. Pepsi, as a soft drink, used to be like number five or six down the line. There was RC Cola. There were a lot of different colas. When Pepsi decided to change their slogan to a taste of a new generation, they shot up to number two. All it was a sentence, and it put them in the number two spot. So don't think that wordsmithing and marketing will not change the course and the direction of people's thinking and buying and voting. So we are not a democracy, never have been. We may be leaning that way. And so that needs to be your fixed point. We are a republic. Look up the difference. I mean, in its most basic form, a republic is I elect you to do what I tell you to do. And in a democracy, I elect you and you do what you think is best for me. Now, that is a very stripped down, basic, generic definition of those two words. But if you look at America and how we were created, we are a republic. We elect people to do our will. We elect representatives to represent us at a federal level and to go to Washington and say, the people of this state say no. And that's what drives me nuts with these senators. They go to Washington and in some of the acceptance speeches, I'm going to fight for you. Yeah, because that's what we elected and pay you to do. Is what we tell you to do, not to fight for us, but fight the fight we tell you to fight. And senators became really, you know, like, ooh, senators. You know, presidents were never picked from the senator bunch back in the day because senators were just glorified messenger boys because you elected your representative. And before gerrymandering, your representative was your local community. That little group of folks that you lived in and went to school with, and you go, I'm going to elect Jane because I went to school with her and she is really smart and cares about our community. Their family has been here 5 years or five generations. And, you know, that's the one that will represent us. And so Jane goes to Phoenix or whatever state you're in, Salt Lake, or wherever the capital is in your state, and all the Janes and Bobs get together and they discuss what the local people want for their community. And then they talk about all these weighty issues that might affect them, like, you know, do you think we should build a highway across there? Well, no, you're going to destroy all this farmland. Can you move it over, you know, 5 miles to where it doesn't cut, you know, Frank's farm in half, and then it can go right down the two big farms and not hurt anyone. And it's like, yeah, that's great. We don't really care which way the road goes. So let's just do that. And you were represented. And then when it was time to go to Washington amongst all your representatives, your Bobs and Janes and Pauls and Franks and Judys, all got together and said, these two people will be our senators to take our message to Washington. And they will say, the people of this state say no on this, but yes on that, and huh-uh on this. And then they write the laws based on what you told them to do. And then they came back home. They didn't sit there and blather on for hours in front of a camera going, well, you know, we senators think that you need to follow this and that. Nobody cares what you think, Senator. I'm sorry, but that's not your job description. It's above your pay grade, because we the people don't want your thinking, because that would be a democracy. You do what we told you to do. You say what we told you to say, and then you come home. And if you don't, you will be recalled instantly. Well, that all got, you know, screwed up. Thank you, FDR and the 17th Amendment. But since we live in this world today where senators are, oh my God, so important, then great. That's, you know, that's what we have to deal with. But back in the day, the senators would just go and vote on weighty issues brought before the president, which were treaties and external things. And the state of Arizona would say, no, we're not going to follow the UN's gun laws. And the state of Utah would go, yeah, us either. And then that was your representation dealing with treaties and commerce with other countries outside the borders of America. All the state laws and issues were worked out in the state, because the state don't really care what the federal government has going on. It's like the landscaper in your yard. You didn't hire him to come in and tell you what color to paint your house and your living room. That's not his job. His job is to take care of external things outside of your house. Like, go mow the grass. Don't cut that tree down. Prune it. That's how it worked. So we need to keep focused on that. And we can't, because they have screwed it up with the 17th Amendment. And until it is, you know, repealed, made gone away, to stop the stupidity, we have to deal with it. And so, therefore, we need control of the Senate, because they pick judges and stuff, which is what they did back in the day. But now they've become omnipotent and omnipresent and just big waste of time. And then they get elected for 6 years, which most of us can't remember what we had for dinner a week ago. And yet we're electing this guy to be the spokesman and the lawmaker for our state every 6 years. So we've lost control of our point of reference, which was the Constitution and the fact that we are a republic, because that wouldn't happen in a republic. But that doesn't mean we can't rein back parts of that. Elect better senators. Let them know what you think, and get the Congress, our representatives, on board with the fact that they control the purse strings. Well, that's kind of hard to say. And could do away with the EPA overnight. They said, well, we're not going to fund it. In this story, you don't like the National Forest Service? Stop funding it, Congress. That's it. You write the checks. They're the controller of the country. You know, if I go out and buy a new truck and my wife doesn't pay the payments on it because she manages the money, then I guess the truck gets repossessed, because that's the way we set it up. So Congress could just stop paying the payments. It's like, we're not going to fund the Board of Education anymore. There. Bye. See ya. Been fun. The heck out of our state. And if you don't leave quick enough, our sheriff's department will arrest you and haul you out. So we do have control of that focal point. But as we allow it to skew left and right, we stop forgetting that we still do control our government. We still do have control over the people that run our lives. But we've lost our focus. And then when they say, you can't do that, you immediately look to your focal point and go, am I walking too far off course? And then you can't see it anymore because you weren't paying attention. You go, well, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, let's turn around and go back. When actually you're heading the right direction, but you don't have a focal point, and you're like, I can't see my big landmark out there anymore. Oh, well, I know it's this way. Come this way. Come on. Let's go walk off this cliff. So that's the importance of it. And that's why I talk about it a lot, you know, and values. So last week I talked more about a religious point of view. This is more of a country and constitutional point of view. I don't know if any of this helped you, but I love to rant. If we don't see our focal point, it's very easy to get distracted and pulled off course. And I see that happening with this last election when our House of Representatives are being elected en masse by a party or of a party that have said things that are diametrically opposed to our main focal point, which is freedom and liberty and the Constitution. And the people that are voting for them, not bad people, any of that, they could be your neighbor, but they've been pulled off point too. And it's hard to have that conversation with somebody when you're like, well, no, here's where we're going. And then they're like, are you sure, dude? Because I remember passing that tree. It's like, no, there's our landmark. Just keep walking that way. Oh, okay, cool, thanks. So it's happening daily, yearly, decades, over decades, you know, every 50 years, every 100 years, we just slowly skew off course. And anyone in mathematics or, you know, works at NASA will tell you, if you're off course by a half of a degree, by the time you get to the moon, you will miss it by miles, if not millions of miles. I'm not a mathematician, so I don't know the exact number, but we all know that. And that's what's happening over the last 200 years. We're just off course, and it might not be some big nefarious, you know, plan to ruin America. I think it is, but it could just be us being too busy to pay attention and allowing ourselves to lose focus on our main landmark where we're heading. And it's not that hard to recorrect over time. It's not going to happen overnight unless we jump on the interstate and head back, you know, 10 miles and then start going, you know, toward our landmark again. But we can't do that. It just doesn't work that way. So we need to start finding our focus point. And I hope your landmark that you walk to in life when it comes to politics is the Constitution, because anything else is going to lead us to tyranny and socialism and finally communism. And we will have lost this great gift called America, called freedom, called liberty. It was lightning in a bottle when that happened. It was magic. It was a blessing. It was God's intervention. It was whatever you call it. It happened, and we're about to lose it if we continue to walk off course. So find your landmark again, and I hope it's your Constitution and not some pie-in-the-sky wannabe dream of socialism or communism. But we can all work together to correct that if we just start helping those that are confused learn why it's important instead of arguing with them about how stupid they are. Then that's not a conversation anymore. So, you know, we would never go to a sign up for a college class where the professor walks in and goes, you guys are all so stupid, I hate you, why are you here? As opposed to today, we're going to learn about, you know, astrophysics. Oh, it's going to be hard? Yeah, it's really complicated, but I'll walk you through it. You know, it's easier. We all like, well, I'm assuming we all like cake. That means I can safely say that, can I? I mean, we all like cake. And if somebody walked up to me and said, eat this cake, and I said, well, I like cake, but I'm not going to eat that one. What is it? And they just tried to force it down my throat, I would resist, fight, and walk away, or, you know, whatever. But if somebody says, I baked this cake, would you try a piece? It was really, turned out really well. It's my first attempt at chocolate cake. You would try a bite. And then if it tastes good, you go, well, thank you. That was really good. What's your recipe? You're still eating cake. You're still being offered cake. One way is offensive, and you will resist. And the other way is how we should work with those that don't understand the importance of the Constitution, freedom, and liberty.
Hey all, it's Rob Alderucci, the host of The Growing Homestead, and I would like to invite you on my adventure into all things homesteading. where we will learn to raise our own fruit, vegetables, as well as caring for livestock in a push for self-sufficiency.
Well, with all things being equal, I think we've talked about politics and finding our focal point in life. So now I think what we need to do is talk about nutrition and weight loss, because everybody's into weight loss. So we got Thanksgiving coming and the holidays. So there'll be plenty of food to go around. So how do you lose weight? I mean, not even in a holiday season, just how do you go about losing weight? Well, there's a couple ways. You can count calories and work out at the gym and still gain weight, not lose any weight, which is odd. Or you can diet on some crazy new age diet, or you could just stop eating so much sugar. Now, that's easier said than done, because we don't realize just how much sugar there is in the food we eat. Sure, there's corn sweeteners and starches and all that stuff, but in baked or mashed potatoes, there's sugar. So in a large baked potato, there's almost a cup of sugar. That's how the Russians make vodka, with potatoes. Corn has sugar. Breads have sugar. Rolls have sugar. Wheats and grains, oats, they all have sugar. Pies obviously have sugar. And not just because of the sugar that's added. You can say, well, I sweetened it with blueberries. Well, blueberries have fructose. That's sugar. The crust is made with flour, so that's sugar. And then you add sugar. So there's sugar all around us. And during the holidays, there will be even more sugar. So at a perfect Thanksgiving meal, you might just eat a bunch of dark meat off the turkey and call it quits. But we're not going to do that. We're going to want to sample pretty much everything. So it's going to be hard during the holiday season. If you do manage to cut back on your carbohydrate intake, you will at least not gain as much weight. So how does the body work when you swallow food? What does it do with that food on a biochemical or a physiological level? Well, as soon as you swallow it, the enzymes in your body all rev up and get ready to go to work. And so if there's a lot of sugar or carbohydrates in that food, then what's going to happen is your body's going to see a rise in blood glucose levels. And what the body does is says, hey, we need to get rid of this. So it produces insulin from the pancreas, and the insulin drives the glucose out of the blood and into the cell membrane and uses it for energy, because the body can either burn carbohydrates or fat for energy. The only way it can burn glucose or sugar for energy is by using insulin. And that's how people become insulin tolerant and things like that. So once your insulin goes up to 20 microunits per deciliter, you've cut off the fat burning portion of your biochemistry by 50%. Now, if it goes up to 32 microunits per deciliter, and we're talking about the sugar in your blood, the glucose, by testing with the glucose meter, then you've shut off all fat burning, and therefore your body can no longer burn fat. It must burn the sugar out of the blood. That's the body's way of saying, oh, got sugar in my gas tank, this isn't going to work. So that little switch is kind of like a bi-fuel generator. It can run on gasoline or it can run on propane. There's a switch that the body and your mechanisms within the body and the enzymes trigger that stays set for 4 hours. And it's really simple. So that switch gets flipped over to the propane mode or sugar burning mode or the carbohydrate burning mode, however you want to look at it. And it's using insulin to facilitate that. And it will stay in that position for 4 hours. So during that whole 4 hours, the body is busy getting the blood sugar out of the blood. And so you are not burning fat. You're not burning the fat that you're wearing around your belly and the thighs and the rear end and the love handles. Everywhere we hate the fat on our body is those storage areas, you know, to where the body puts the fat that it cannot burn. And then it stays there, basically in storage, until it can burn that. But it cannot burn it not the stuff in storage and not the fat that you've eaten in your diet until it gets flipped back to burning gas again. And just like a generator, it can only do one thing or the other. It's either going to burn gasoline, which is fat in this example, or propane, which is carbohydrates in this example. So you flip that switch by eating too much carbohydrates. Too much carbohydrates is usually more than 100 grams per day. But you got to kind of keep track of it per meal, because if you ate all 100 grams of carbohydrate in one meal, then you're not going to be burning fat. And all the fat that was in that one meal is now going to get stored. So I usually break it up, 25, no more than 25 grams of carbohydrates per feeding, I guess. And then it resets, and then you're back to normal. Well, what happens with most of us is we eat so much carbohydrates and we get so little energy out of carbohydrates as opposed to eating a high-fat diet that we eat a lot of carbohydrates for one meal, and then 2 hours later, we're hungry because our body needs more energy and it's not getting it from the carbohydrates because they've flashed off. And so then your body sends out that signal and says, feed me. And you obey it, and you're like, yeah, I'm starving, and then you eat again. And usually Americans, for the most part, eat more carbohydrates. You eat a Snickers bar. I don't care if you eat a granola bar. There's just too many carbs in it. That switch gets flipped back over to burning sugar again for 4 more hours. So then the next meal comes along, and you're starving. So you eat a big steak and mashed potatoes and whatever you have for dinner. And all of the fat in that food gets shuttled off into storage, and you only burn the carbs. And so therefore, you can't lose weight because you're always in this bad fuel mix ratio. So if you did the math on it, let's say you ate a 200 calorie meal for breakfast. And of that 200 calories, or of that 400 calories, 200 are from fat and 200 are from carbohydrates. And those carbohydrates raise your insulin to where it flips that switch. So the other 200 calories from the fat is now put in storage. And you're only running on 200 calories. So of course you're going to get hungry in a few hours. So it's like half of the gas you put in your generator cannot be used. So you keep running out of gas and you're like, man, this thing just goes through propane like crazy. Well, of course, because it's only getting half. It's only getting half of the fuel you put in it. And then so you eat a snack, which is more carbohydrates, and then you eat a big, 600 calorie lunch. And even if 500 of it was from fat, since you took that snack and you reset that switch, you only get 100 calories from the carbohydrates. The other 500 are now put back in storage. So now you're constantly adding to your storage, but you're never tapping into that to burn it unless you were to fast or skip a meal and get out of that cycle to where you're in sugar burning mode. And then the body will go, we need something to eat. Oh, here's all this fat. We can now burn it because we've been switched over to fat burning. And then it'll start using that. But it doesn't just use it all willy-nilly because it wants to or because you're hungry. If that switch is flipped, it cannot access that. So it's pretty much like a gun safe or anything else. There's stuff in it, but it can't access it because it doesn't have the keys to get in there for 4 hours. So maybe that'll help kind of put a visual to it. So during the holidays, we're going to eat a lot of, turkey and stuff, which is usually lean meat. Most people like the white meat. I like the dark meat. It's very high in fat. But then if I were to eat a big old serving of mashed potatoes and pie, then all that turkey meat's just going to go to fatten me up. And that's why they say eating fat makes people fat. Well, part of that's true because their diet balance and their carbohydrates are too high, so the body can't burn it. And therefore, eating fat will make you fat. But if you stopped eating the carbs, then all the fat in storage would get used up and you would lose weight and you would look better because you're now emptying the storage of all that fat that we like looking at so much in the mirror, said no one ever at all. So it works that way. If you're always putting in too much sugar and you're always flipping that switch, then you're always storing everything else as fat and you cannot lose weight, even if you're going to the gym. You just cannot do it. It's physiologically impossible to lose weight eating too many carbohydrates. And any fat that you do eat, even in a French fry, you know, it's fried, so there's some fat in it that gets put over there in one of the shelves. You know, it says, here's some more fat to store. So you can't do it eating that type of diet. And once you figure out the mathematics and the physiology of it, and you realize just how simple it is, you don't need to be following any weird diet. You just go on a meat eater's diet. You can eat meat, you know, high fat meat. Don't buy the lean stuff. That stuff's expensive. So eat the hamburger that's, 23 to 28% fat or however they balance it out. Eat the high fat content hamburger, and it costs a lot less, like $1 a pound less, because it's not being made from lean meat. Because you want the fat. You don't want all that protein. You want the fat. And then, protein is a small part of the equation, because you're eating meat in a natural sense. So just eat it the way it was ground up, and it's usually balanced. And don't worry about macros and all that. Just eat meat, eggs, cheese, poultry, fish, and avoid, carbohydrates and breads and grains and pastas and orange juice and fruit and all that stuff, and just eat a high fat diet. And within a week, you will start seeing results that quick. And then if you keep doing it, you will start just losing weight. And then eventually when you get your body's shape that you want back, then you can start worrying about how many calories you need to eat in a day, because it's still just like a gas tank. If you got a 20-gallon tank and you try to stuff 30 gallons in it, it's just going to run all over the driveway at the gas station. Well, our body doesn't do that. It just stores it as fat. So don't do that, because it can't burn that fat. Even though you're in a state of ketosis, it can't burn it because you put an excess in there. Then you can start dialing in on how much, calories should I eat in a day. And that's pretty simple math. There's calculators all over the internet that'll figure it out. I think I have one of my websites, hellohighfatdiet.com, that kind of breaks down the mathematics for you. And I think that article was something about being a control freak. I can't remember, but it's there. And so, you can lose the weight, and it's not complicated. They've tried to make it complicated, but it is not complicated. It's just physics. You touch a red hot piece of metal, you're going to get burned. It's just that simple. So if you're eating too many carbs, you're never in ketosis, which means you're never burning fat, which means no matter how much you starve yourself on a silly diet, you're always going to be hungry. And if you're not in ketosis, because you're always flipping that generator over to propane, you will never burn the fat that you've stored over the years. So, and once you start figuring out the math and how it works, and you just go, I can drop weight precipitously if I just stop eating carbs, and I don't really have to worry about macros and this and that and working out at the gym. I can eat a lot and be satiated and not worry about a thing, as long as I'm not putting sugar in my blood. Which, you see all these commercials, they're like, I got to lower my A1C, which is their blood sugar. It's like, well, I got a novel idea. Stop eating sugar. It really is that simple. You gain weight because you're eating too much sugar. And then eventually you become diabetic. You get hardening of the arteries, osteoporosis, dementia. All these things are caused from eating too much sugar. And they've known this since 1985. There's thousands of peer-reviewed studies on this, but somehow it's not getting into the mainstream for us to know. So I've just let you in on that. That's really, really how simple it is. And it really is, you are what you eat. And if you continue to buy into the grains and fruit diet and salads and lean meat, you're always going to fight weight issues. You're never going to feel energized. You're going to feel lethargic, and all your hormones are going to drop out of balance and everything, because our body's made to burn ketone bodies, and sugar is actually the alternative fuel. So there you have it. Hope you guys all enjoyed this show. Give me a call, 520-261-9149, and leave a comment, leave a question, tell me you think I'm a nut. It doesn't matter. We'll talk about it. Have a great week. Bye-bye.